Okay, so having established the notion of minhag and the notion of what is the basic theme of Bava Basra as a whole in the first Mishnah, so the Gemara takes us into the topic of Hezekriya, which seems to be the first significant sugya in this Masechta, and is tremendously significant because it impacts a lot of other things, impacts a lot of things in halacha, a lot of things in life, and a lot of things in this Masechta. So it takes up, I only gave you a few Gemaras to look at today, tomorrow I'll give you a few more, but you see it takes up sugyas for a lot of the first half of the parak. It goes throughout the first seven or eight blot. There are many sugyas that draw on this, and then going later on into the second parak, there's some important Gemaras, and also into Cheskes Habatim, this concept comes up again and again. And what you'll notice is that there are a few basic things that are not really explained and that we need to try to understand even on a basic level. So first of all, even just, what do the words mean? And so what does Hezek Re'ia mean? And it's noteworthy that the Rishonim on the Daf, over here at least, you don't get very much definition at all. In other places, you can find a few exceptions here and there, where particularly the Ramban, which we'll get to, in Cheskes Habatim, but a few others. But for the most part, the Gemara doesn't, the Rishonim don't really explain to us what Hezek Re'ia even is. So how would you try to explain it, to translate it? What do the words mean? We're going to see that even taking it further, what does the concept represent? Is going to involve a lot, but just how would you even translate the phrase? What is Hezek Re'ia? All right?
A violation of privacy.
Violation of privacy. It gets interesting because it's a conceptual definition. So, okay, a violation of privacy. So certainly not a literal definition. You're saying, so a violation of, so the Gemara is talking about our concern regarding violations of privacy. Zach?
This is a very literal definition, but damage due to seeing.
Damage due to seeing. Okay, so what does that mean practically? How do you damage somebody with seeing? What does that mean just in terms of its concept, in terms of its words? So one thing that we see is that it may not be one thing, that the fact that it comes up in these different places, just even most of them in Bava Basra, but just different places in Bava Basra, the examples may not necessarily all be of the same category. And that's something we'll try to highlight a little bit today. But also, what we need to understand is the machlokas that the Gemara identifies, Hezek Re'ia, Shmei Hezek, or not Shmei Hezek. If you think about it, both sides of that machlokas are also hard to translate. So, having translated Hezek Re'ia either as a privacy violation or a damage through seeing, what does the rest of the phrase mean? So, Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek, we'll start with that, and then we'll see that Hezek Re'ia Lav Shmei Hezek is also challenging as a translation. So, how would you translate Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek? Which, spoiler alert, seems to be the practical halacha. So, it becomes particularly important to try to understand what does that mean? Hezek Re'ia Shmei Hezek. Levi?
Hezek Re'ia then is subject is considered damaged, it's considered damaged by halacha, and is therefore subject to all of the, I guess, guidelines regarding damage we've seen in Bava, Kama, and Bava Metzia.
So it sounds like it means that, right? It sounds like it means that. The problem is going to be on a couple levels. So we know that it doesn't actually mean that, even though it could have meant that. How do we know that it doesn't actually mean that in the fullest sense? Well, one thing is that Nezikin generally comes with liability. That if I am Odom HaMazik, so then I have to pay for my Hezek. And in fact, that's what we know from the Chumash more than anything else. That I think we alluded to before Yantif, that there's a lot of discussion, what's the source in the Torah for an Isser Hezek? How do you know that you're not allowed, let's say, especially if you're prepared to pay, how do you know that you're not allowed to damage somebody's property? If I come to your car or your windshield, I have a sledgehammer and a checkbook at the same time, so I'm ready to pay for that windshield, I just would get some frustration out by smashing your windshield. So I'm ready to pay. I have the checkbook here. So am I prohibited from doing that? So everyone assumes yes, but the question is, what's the source? The Torah is not so explicit about that. So the chiyuv nezikin, the idea that you have to pay for the damage, that's where we have more explicit sources in Parshas Mishpatim, also in Parshas Emor. So usually nezikin, as a halachic concept, means there's a chiyuv tashlumin. We don't find that in the concept of Hezekiah. So to say that it means it's a nezikin in all of its meanings does not seem to be true. Hi.
Well, I think we also have the definition that we've been using up until now, which is Hezekiah is a thing.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so that's that we did mention. So we'll come to that in a second because we're going to be forced into some kind of middle space. Because it doesn't seem like the literal translation of Shmei Hezek could work. And to say that it's a Nezek in the same sense as Arba Avos Nezikin, so it seems to not meet that standard. And it's not just because of the lack of Teshlumin. It's also because, you know, could you really say it the same way, that if I take a sledgehammer and break your windshield, I'm clearly a Mazik. If I spy on you, then I'm doing something wrong, but it's hard to see it as really in that same category. We need to figure out exactly how to characterize it. But it's hard, especially because it is mixed in, although sometimes Nezik is also just mixed in with your normal daily activities. But for the most part, it's going to be very different in its nature. And so we just said that Nezikin in the Torah is identified primarily by Teshlumin and presumably by an Isser, even though that takes some work to find it out. So is Hezek Re'ia an Isser? Is that what the Gemara means when it says Shmei Hezek? Is that the point? What do you think? Oh, you're shaking your head.
No, I don't think so.
So it doesn't sound like it means that. Right? It doesn't sound like the point is that it's Isser. Even though there are Isurim connected to it, right? That mixed in with these sugyas, you find some Lashonos of Isser. Zach?
I don't necessarily see how it not necessarily being fully Isser means it's not Nezikin, because we have the concept by Hotzah that it's still a Malacha as much as any other Malacha, just it's a Malacha Grua. So it has like other, you know, it's a weird malacha, but it's one of the 39. So in the same year, it's sort of like a nezikin grua.
So it's interesting, because it's an interesting comparison. You'll get me on a tangent because there are rishonim who say hotzah is not a malacha, but that's the grua may even actually mean that. But there's the point of, you know, what is the message of saying Shmei Hezek? That if, let's say, the first two things we know about nezikin are that there's a chi of teshlumin, and that there is some kind of an Isser we have to work hard to find, but that there presumably is. So both of those fall short in this context. First of all, because there's no clear Chiyuv Teshlumin. And as an Isser, it's a little complicated. Because, yes, there are Isserim that are brought up in this context. So, for example, the Gemara on Daf Beis and Beis about a person shouldn't stand the Kamaso Shachaveru and look over his field, because there are some issues there. The Rishonim derive it also from the Gemara in Cheskes Abatim, where there is, and this is also something that we'll have to explore, that there is a value that's associated more with Hezekiah from the, ironically, the praise of Bilam, right, that Bilam says, Matovu Halach Yaakov, and the Gemara here tells us that what impressed him was a sense of tznius, which is apparently connected to Hezekiah. So there could be Isurim that are associated with the notion of Hezekiah, but it doesn't seem like that's what we're saying. We say Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, the point is that there's an Isur. So it doesn't mean necessarily that there's a, doesn't seem to mean at all there's a Chiyuv Tashlumin. And it doesn't seem to specifically mean to tell us that there is an Isser, although that there is more of. So I think Alexander had a hand up before, and then Yossi?
Actually, never mind.
Okay.
You said standing in the field, is that actual hazakriya, or that's even higher?
Because so, right. So
you actually cause damage.
Exactly. So the point is, I wouldn't identify that exactly with hazakriya. It's part of the hazakriya discussion, that when you start talking about hazakriya, so you'll bring in some dinim, which are phrased as Yisurim. But it doesn't seem to be that's the message of Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, to tell to teach you.
It's Ein Hara. If anything, that's more literal Hezekiah.
Yeah, so we'll come to
are
that.
Are we calling that actual Hezek, though?
So that's something we have to figure out. That's something we'll have to figure out what that means. So a literal translation of Hezekiah as Hezek is difficult. So, as Zach put it, I guess according to what we said before, that it seems like the best we can do to begin with is to use modern jargon and say it's a thing. Hezekiah is a thing. It's not nothing. Right? That it has some kind of impact. The problem is that if that works for definition of Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, as maybe it does, so then the opposite becomes more difficult. Right, so what is the position of Hezekiah Lav Shmei Hezek? Would anyone say, halachically or otherwise, that privacy is nothing? Or that there's no such thing as a privacy violation? How would you translate, if Hezekiah means Hezek's a thing, Hezekiah is a thing, so what is Hezekiah Lav Shmei Hezek mean? And this is not a small point, and Achronim struggle with this, just to highlight that it's a difficult issue. What would those words mean? Hezekiah Lav Shmei Hezek.
Maybe something like it's non-act uponable.
Okay, so, right, it would mean that, yes, we recognize that it's true, that it exists, and we have to clarify, we haven't clarified yet, so you brought up the Ein Hara mention, and this is one of the major issues also, just the nature of the damage that comes from Hezekiah, we have to still determine that. But whatever it is, so presumably the other side, Lav Shmei Hezek, does not believe that it's nothing. It just believes that Lav Shmei Hezek for what purpose? So Shmuel started to say that maybe it's not actionable. So why wouldn't it be actionable? I mean, especially being that we don't collect money for it anyway, so it's not actionable. Just to even clarify, Alex, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you could say that it's the responsibility of the one who is like damaged to protect themselves and to protect their privacy. It's not the obligation on others.
Okay, very good. So that is the way that many understand it, right? That everyone recognizes that whatever is at stake here is real. Right? There's no one here, the CEO of Google was quoted a few years ago as saying, get over it, privacy is finished, there's no such thing anymore. So certainly, I don't know how many people in the world would agree with that, but certainly halachically and in Jewish philosophy, I don't think anyone would say there's no value to privacy. So to say Lav Shmei Hezek can't mean the opposite of it's a thing, so it's not a thing, it's nothing, no one would really say that it's nothing. The harm that is identifiable in privacy violations are real, according to everybody. So to say, Lav Shmei Hezek, so to put together what Shmuel and Alexander said, so Shmuel starts to say it's not actionable, so yes, but we have to figure, the actionable territory is already limited because there's no monetary compensation that is involved, at least in a normal sense. So when we say it's actionable, what do we mean in most of our cases? So what we mean is that maybe there is an isser involved in some cases that we have to figure out. Sometimes it regulates their behavior, although we don't know yet to what extent that's always a part of it. But maybe it means it's a question of how we should behave. But most specifically, what it means is we can control what other people do proactively. And not that we can collect compensation afterwards. We can't punish somebody for having violated it. But we can tell you what to do, l'chachila. That we can tell you how you can build your house and how you can behave, because there is something real there. And in legal terminology, they call it injunctive relief, that I can't necessarily punish you for what you did, but I can stop you from what you're doing, or stop you from what you might do. So I can tell you, you want to build a house, you got to build a house in a way that doesn't hurt me. You have to, or right now you are hurting me, and you have to stop hurting me. Now see?
Oh, are we saying this is daraisa or darabon?
So that's also, because it goes to the question we always talked about the Mishnah, right? Where the whole Mishnah was it daraisa or darabon? So we saw that the most likely possibility is that they are daraisa applications, daraisa values with applications that come later. So we discussed in the context of the Mishnah overall various sources, Minat Torah, for the values that the Mishnah is representing. To get more specifically into Hezekiah, so it could extend from all those values we spoke about. But also, we'll see that when it comes to privacy violations, there are other additional issues that may also contribute to what's going on. So when it is actionable, we say Shmei Hezek. For the most part, we mean basically what you would call injunctive relief. Like, I can stop you from doing things that may cause my privacy to be violated. So that's generally what we're talking about in terms of actionability. And so then to say lach shmei hezek, we mean no, it's not actionable. Shmuel, the question?
Before we were trying to make it like how it's different from regular hezek, like,
yeah.
Why can't it just be it is hezek, but since there's no like maisa, that's why.
See, well, for the first side to say that it is.
Yeah, that it is. Meaning right. the reason why, like
it could be.
It
but
really is. It's just that, like, we can't point to anything you did specifically. Like you. So therefore, we can't cause you to.
Because we still need a nafka mina then, because the assumption here is that this affects the halacha some way, so it's going to have some ramification. So it could be that you're right. You know that it means hezek riyah shmei hezek means. That, oh, this is an act of Nazikin, but there are exclusions. It doesn't have a Teshlumen for whatever reason. So, but wherever it could end up making a difference, it will. So I can stop you from doing it. You know, I can impose regulations on you because of it. Could mean that. I don't know if it's functionally different. But, so then, Alexander's point is very well taken, and that's how some understand, that everybody recognizes there are real issues here. But the question is, whose responsibility are they? So, being that, here's also where some of the subjectivity comes into it, being that, okay, we need to coexist. Coexisting means there's going to be some imposition from one on the other. And maybe in an ideal world, not that everyone considers this ideal, but some might think an ideal life is they could live somewhere without anybody looking at anything they do, and they would have complete privacy and complete access to all the resources around them without any competition. But that's just not the reality of life for the most part. So where do we balance things? And so everything is going to involve some kind of balance. And where is that line drawn? So to what extent is the fact that I would like to have some privacy, to what extent is that your problem, and to what extent is that my problem? And so, an example that we'll see is a whole different discussion. We'll get to it a little bit later. But let's say if I want to have a private conversation. Let's say I want to sit in the base medrash and have a private conversation. And you're at the other end of the table. You're next over the table. So, is it your job to move? Or is it your job to put on a mask so nobody can hear what you're saying? Or is it my job to say, listen, if I want to have a private conversation in the base medrash, then I have to recognize I'm in a pretty public place, and that's the risk I'm taking. Okay, I'm hoping that with my mask on and everyone yelling, no one can hear, but it's a reality that's not perfect. So, or people go on dates in restaurants, they certainly have private conversations in restaurants, so they can't say no one else can come to the restaurant at the same time. They know they're taking on a certain level of risk, and they'll try to keep their voice down so that people at the next table can't hear. But they can't say, how dare you come to this restaurant when I'm here, because it's a public place, and we understand that we're sharing space. So where do you draw the line? And this conversation about hearing those conversations, what you might call hezek shmi, I'm giving a little bit of a preview, it's a whole different discussion than mostly comes up in later sources. Is there a concept, and it's going to be very instructive to compare the two, but the notion of hezek shmiya, are you damaging somebody by overhearing them? So that's a topic that we'll get to a little bit down the line, but it just illustrates this point that there are some circumstances where, yes, it hurts me to have you violate my privacy, so then I shouldn't do private things in a place where you can violate that, where it's exposed. So to a certain extent, one is given that responsibility to protect themselves, so maybe that's always true. Right? So that's indeed how many achronim understand the tzad of hezek riya lav shmei hezek, that not the opposite of the other position. Right? The first position, hezek riya is a thing. Lav shmei hezek does not mean it's not a thing. It's definitely a thing. But whose job is it to protect it? So it's your own job to protect it. So you don't want to be seen, so then don't do things in public. And yes, your neighbor lives nearby, so then you'll have to be very careful because your neighbor can see a lot. The question about that? So what's also noteworthy, and here you saw some of the Gemaras, but not all of them, but I'll give you the more extensive list tomorrow. I have a little bit more time on Tuesday. Look a little bit further. So what's also noteworthy is that there are cases throughout the next few plat and elsewhere that are exceptions to some degree. That even if you don't hold hezek riya shmei hezek, but there are certain things we can agree that there is a certain higher level of responsibility, where it sounds like sometimes it's more explicit in the Gemara, sometimes the Rishonim say it. But there are a number of exceptions, a pretty long list of exceptions, actually, where even if you don't necessarily hold hezek riya shmei hezek, but here you have to take a stronger stance. So I don't know if you're familiar with anything. Anyone see any of the ideas that emerge as exceptions, Zach?
Well, like Hazika the Rabim,
okay,
right? Hazika bias, like, you know, the public can see, I guess apparently everybody seeing your what's going on in your private area is, like, really bad. And then there's also another, I guess, from the other end, which is even for an individual seeing into somebody's, you know, house.
Okay,
really
so,
bad.
Yeah, so those are two of the exceptions. They're actually very different from each other, and they both open the door, no pun intended, to all kinds of other ideas. There are a number of other examples in between, which we'll also get to, but just let's say focus on those two, because those two actually come up on Bayes and Bayes. Alex, do you want to comment about that? Yeah.
I just thought the Hazikah Rabim was interesting because it doesn't place the obligation on the Rabim, the people who are walking by and who are actually doing the Hezek, I guess. It's the it would be the other owners in the Chatzek.
Yes, it's more than interesting. It's fascinating because it actually does, open the door to a whole different aspect of this. So let's zero in on those two examples for a moment. So the Hezekiah the bias part and the Hezekiah the Rabim, the two examples that Zach mentioned, they're actually very different from each other, as Alex is highlighting. Do you prefer Alex or Alexander?
Al or Alexander.
Sorry.
Not so much Alex.
Sorry, I apologize. Wrong. So as Al was saying, that those two examples are actually very different from each other and both very instructive. So Hezekiah the bias, let's start with that. So even those who don't necessarily think that you automatically have to have a wall between two parts of a chutzner, but they would agree that there are cases where you do. So, for example, if you're going to have a window that's going to open up, window from your house is going to open up right into somebody else's chatzer. Or there's a number of other gemaras, you'll get to see them. If you have a roof that oversees somebody else's chatzer. So, in these cases, it seems like the understanding is that we have to have some kind of a line drawn in terms of this whole public space point that we mentioned a few minutes ago. That, yes, if I do things in public, people are going to see, and I can't blame them for seeing, and I can't say you're violating my privacy, and that there'll be a tzad in the Gemara that those things, it's my job to not do in public if I don't want to be witnessed. But there's a line somewhere. I got to have some space for private activities. And therefore, it's clearly everyone will agree that there is some scenario where it's too much. There's some scenario where I am exposed against my will and that it's not fair to say to me, go do it somewhere else. Because it creates a imbalance. So a lot of these situations, you'll see the Rishonim, what they have to do with, what's a good way to say it, is the CE and the seer, you know, the person being seen and the person doing the seeing. So the one who's seeing, a lot of the common elements among some of these exceptions is that normally, if I go outside, I can expect people will see. And if I am inside in a locked room, so then I can expect privacy, that no one will see. Where are the in-between places? Right? When maybe I can be seen, maybe I can't be seen. So let's say if I'm in a room, I can tell, is there someone else in the room or not in the room? And then I can make a decision whether I want to do something more confidential or not. But what about scenarios where I can't reasonably know? So if you have a window into my courtyard, I don't know when you're in the house looking at the window. I can't even see you. Right, so then that upsets the balance. Or if you have a roof that looks into my courtyard, so I don't know what's going on. I can't see you on the roof. So for many of these exceptions, that creates a significant difference then. You can't tell me, oh, just be careful, don't do private things, if I can't reasonably have a sense of whether you're looking or not. So when I'm out in the street, okay. When I'm in my locked room, it's the other extreme. But when you have a window that goes right into my courtyard, I'm never going to know. So that kind of a scenario seems to be unreasonable. Now, it's very interesting also, because just to also compare this to a legal standard. So in the general world, one of the major factors of whether there's a privacy violation or not, and let's say this is also relevant for, let's say, if the police search something in a unjustified, unwarranted context. So one of the very relevant terms is, does a person have an expectation of privacy? So if I'm walking out in the street, you can't say you have an expectation of privacy that no one is going to see. But if I have something hidden in a bag, or if I have something hidden in my locker, so then I have reasonable basis to think that no one's going to see that unless I let them. So clearly, in a lot of these cases, this is a major issue. Do you have an expectation of privacy? So to have these very gray areas where a person just has no clue when he's being watched and when he's not being watched. So that's where even those who say Lav Shmeh Hezek, which we've now translated as it's your responsibility to protect yourself from Hezek, they will say, yeah, but if you have no way of knowing because the guy's on the roof, or the guy just opened up a window right across, so then that's already not fair. Shmuel?
I guess on the other option, like theoretically could be like they just treat it as, meaning it's annoying, but just treat it as public. Like, just as an example, like I remember when I first got my email, my dad told us, all of us, that anything you ever put online is public.
Right.
So when you write an email, you think you're writing to someone, pretend that you're actually emailing everyone. So, like, why, what, like, theoretically, why, if the person's not sure that you might be staring at him in his kitchen on the roof, so just treat the kitchen. Like, theoretically, you could just say, so treat your kitchen like...
So that opens up something interesting that will also make a difference here, because what your father said was good advice. He was giving you wise, very wise advice, and hopefully everyone understands that and appreciates that. That he's saying that you, to protect yourself, should understand, you should act as if everything you put there is public because it could happen. And you shouldn't trust the people you're dealing with and the internet as a whole to keep it private. So the difference is, that is comparable to saying you should lock your door at night, or that you know shouldn't open your wallet in public and let people see all the money you have in it because you'll get mugged. Right? Why am I making that comparison? Because that's good advice to protect yourself from burglary or from being mugged in the streets. But let's say the guy does mug you. Would anyone say, well, what could you do? You know, he had a right to it because you opened your door. So there's a big line being drawn there between the advice that's being given to you to protect yourself and the behavior that someone else might do and saying it's legitimate. So if somebody overhears your conversation in a restaurant, because he's at the next table, so then you say he's acting legitimately. He has a right to be sitting there. You're talking in proximity to him. He's not doing anything wrong. But if he hacks into your emails, so then he's doing something very wrong, and we'll get later into what that is. But so there's a big difference between the two. So your father's wisely telling you, don't put private things in emails because somebody may act unjustly and expose them. So if you want to make sure you're not vulnerable, so don't do that. Meaning the same thing as don't leave your door open at night or don't open your wallet because somebody may act unjustly towards you. But there's a difference between that and saying the person's not even acting unjustly. Right? So to say that the person can't be expected to not over, or a person can't be expected not to build his house next to you because there's only so much space for houses and people have to be able to build somewhere, and you can't say he can't live his life just because you want a hyper-private life and you're not willing to buy your own island. So that's not reasonable. So there's a difference between these discussions, which are mostly about what's reasonable and what's not reasonable, and other discussions where it's good advice not to trust anyone. But if they violate your trust, they are doing the wrong thing. So that's a part of what we'll need to figure out. Where is that line drawn? Now, we're going to have to continue tomorrow. I guess we can daven mincha up here. We said in Elul, we usually mock it to go to base Spanish, but we'll stay up here and daven mincha up here. So just to make one more other point as an introduction, and then we'll continue tomorrow. So the point that I think it was Al was making, that Hezekiah the Rabbim, is a whole different issue, because just to say a one-word introduction, one sentence, not one word, one sentence, 1 minute introduction to this, it really possibly gives us a whole different paradigm of what we're talking about here. Because the idea that there's a mutual obligation to build an outer fence and a courtyard to protect from the public. So there's so much that's interesting about that. First of all, the idea of a difference between Hezekiah the Rabbim and Hezekiah the Yochid is itself very fascinating, has major implications for today's society, where you have something like Google Earth, where anyone can look anywhere in the world at any time, at least theoretically. Google Earth's on a delay, but the idea is that, yes, I always knew that the person across the street can see my front lawn, but there's a difference between that and anyone in the world ever at any time being able to see my front lawn. Certainly feels very different. So the notion of Hezekiah the Rabbim as distinct from Hezekiah the Yochid is itself interesting. But I think Al was talking about something else, that it's not even here where the whole shift of who's responsible. And so if I tell my neighbor he's got to help me build this fence because of the Hezekiah the Rabbim, so that's a completely different kind of scenario, that until now we were saying you have to build a fence so that you're not spying on me. But now we're saying you have to help me protect from others. So that, just to give a little bit of a preview, that is a major discussion in the Acharonim, to understand what Hezekiah is really all about, because there is a major classification issue in this sugya. So when we talk about Hezekiah being a thing, so do we mean that it's a thing between me and you, and you're hurting me and I can stop you? Or maybe that's not what this Mishnah is about at all. Maybe what it means is that the Mishnah and the Masechta is about how do we share our responsibilities. Right, so later on, the parak's going to talk about taxes and the schools and communal welfare. And basically, we have needs as a community, and how do we divide up the responsibility for those needs? So maybe the same way, when you get to Daf Ches and later on in the parak, the Gemara is talking about that. Maybe this Mishnah is also talking about that. It's saying there are things that we need as a tzibur. And if they are genuine needs, so you don't have the right to say, and this is becomes a very major issue, difference between the Gemara and life today, but you don't say, Medina the Gemara, you don't say that, well, I don't care if we have a school or not, so I'm not going to chip in. I don't care if we have a mikveh or not, so I'm not going to chip in. There are things that the community needs, and if the community needs, the community is responsible to uphold. So too in secular society, right? You can't tell the government that I don't think we need public schools, so I'm not paying taxes. Right? The government assumes they need public schools, so everyone has to pay taxes. So that's what a lot of this Masechta and a lot of this parak is about. So maybe that's what this Mishnah is about. It's not about you and me. It's about that because Hezekiah is a thing, so therefore the community needs walls. The community needs fences. And therefore, it's not up to you to say, well, I don't care. I'm fine. I want people to see my house. You know, we need for our chatzar needs a fence. So, and that fence is not because of you, it's because of everyone else. But it lands on you to say, yeah, you also have to help out. So that din of Hezekiah the Rabbim, that might shift our whole perspective of what Hezekiah is about. Not necessarily an offense between the two of us, but offense between the two. But not necessarily something you're doing wrong, but that because it's a thing, because there's a value, and matovo halacha Yaakov, to have fences and to have such structure, and our society wants to have a school and a shul and a mikveh, and it also wants to have fences because that's also a part of what our society values. So therefore, it's also your responsibility to chip in. And you don't get to say, nah, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in the school, I don't believe in the mikveh, I don't believe in privacy. You don't get to say that. You have to also participate. So maybe Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek all of a sudden means something totally else. It just means that it's a value, and it's not a value that you can decide that you're going to opt out of. So let's quickly recap. So we have a lot more to do, but let's just quickly recap what we spoke about. So we tried to figure out what do the words mean of Hezek Re'iyah. Came up with a few theories that either it means a privacy violation, it's a more conceptual definition, or damage by seeing, more literal definition, but we're going to see a lot of possible examples. And we also, to take it further, what does the phrase mean, Shmei Hezek or La Shmei Hezek? So to say Shmei Hezek, it's a literal Hezek, is difficult because the most prominent feature of the Hezek in the Torah is Teshlim, and you don't have that. The second most is the assumption that's an Isser. That we're not sure if we have either. There are Yisurim that are invoked in connection with Hezekiah, but it's not clear that it's always talking about, meaning that there's always an Isser involved. So those aspects, hard to say. So most literally, it's a thing. It's something that I have the right to worry about, and that could affect how you live your life, because I can stop you from doing certain things, or I can impose my will upon you because of that reality. So the question is, what does the opposite mean? Say, Lashmeh Hezek, or is it not a thing? Does anyone hold it's not a thing? So no, presumably it is a thing according to everybody, but the question, what does that mean? So does it mean it's not actionable? Or, and the actionability was already very limited, Or maybe it means that this is your responsibility to preserve that thing on your own and not to impose that on someone else, just like somebody wants to have a private conversation in the Beis Medrash. So it's his job to worry about who might be nearby, and it's not everyone else's job to not be sitting at their table. So even within that, we saw that there are a number of exceptions, and that even those who maintain that it's not anyone else's responsibility, Lav Shmeh has to get your responsibility, recognizes certain exceptions. There's a lot of exceptions. We didn't get to all of them, but we noted that there are at least two categories, that first of all, the Hezekiah Debayis kind of things, that there are certain circumstances, they roughly all have that common element, that if the CE cannot know when he's being seen because the person's on a roof or in a house or things like that, that really compromises their ability to function, and you can't reasonably say, just don't do anything private ever just in case this guy might be watching. So that creates a shift in the balance. And then also the exception of Hezekiah Derabim, a fascinating exception, first of all, just what it suggests about the difference in degree and what that means. But also the question of why is that my neighbor's problem if I'm worried about other people from outside the world seeing, and it's not even going to prevent my neighbor from seeing, so why is that his problem? So maybe it's a whole different kind of concept. Maybe it means that this is not about, say, what you call harchakus nezikin, which is the topic of the second parak more overtly, that I don't want you damaging me, so you have to keep your distance. Maybe it's not about that. Maybe it's more about things in this end of this parak. It's about the shared responsibilities of a tzibur, and that if we say this is a real value, so then you can't opt out and say, I'm not going to contribute, because we have to recognize that this is a thing. So we still haven't figured out what the thing is, what's the nature. That'll be their next topic, God willing. So tomorrow we'll give you a little bit more to look at in terms of some of these extra gemaras, and that'll be our next thing on our agenda. So how do we characterize what is the nature of the offense of Hezekiah? Okay, Ashoka, do we have a volunteer who'd like to lead us? Face that way.